Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. On the one hand, I regret to say that my expected guest, Alec Walsh, had to pull out at the last moment, but I'm pleased to say that Terry Walters, who was with us last week, and due to problems in getting a link with him early in the programme, had less than half in which to talk to us, is with us again today. So we'll have more opportunity to hear about his link with the beings from Orion and some of the experiences that have affected his life. So, can I welcome you onto the programme, Terry?
Yes, thanks.
Can you hear me okay, by the way?
Pardon?
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you good this time, yeah.
Oh, that's good, because I know last time there seemed to be some problems at times. Okay, that seems to be how it goes. Sometimes it's a very good connection. Now, for the benefit of the listeners who might not have been with us last week, and it doesn't hurt to tell the story again anyway, could you start off by telling us how your link with the Orion being started, and perhaps what effect it had on you in your sort of early years?
Well, okay. Coming from... it's pretty difficult to explain, but I'll do my best. Coming from two grandparents, two grandmothers were the psychic, and one of them really took me under her wing. And she used to tell me things, and she used to give me photographs, and she used to tell me to tell her about the people in the photographs, which were old photographs. Which I did. And so there was something there going on. Then as I got older, I was, when I was at school and I had friends of mine at school, and if they weren't well, I used to think about them all the time. They get well. So there was a genuine connection there, but I've got to say that I take this very, very seriously. I know there's other things that go on with the UFO connections and things, which I probably don't understand. I can only speak about my experiences. So as a child, getting older, I really thought that everybody was the same, that they could, maybe every now and again, if they was in conversation with somebody, they could pick up on what they was really thinking. Yeah. I didn't know that there was something there for me which was maybe a bit different. And I'm sure there are people that this happens to. I'm sure I'm not on my own. It's not everybody you pick up on their thoughts. It's just certain people, maybe on the same sort of wavelength. And I can only explain that, like, the whales in the sea sending out a message, and they pick it up. So I pick up these things. So as a child growing up, it was very difficult. I went to my parents and explained things that I'd seen, which I wasn't too pleased with, that frightened me. And they really didn't give me any answers. But I can remember as a child that somebody used to stand by my bed every night, and it was like a guy or a woman with a cloak, no face, never said anything. I just turned around, I could feel their presence in the room. I turned around and I'd be so frightened. One night I saw this person there, and we lived in a big old house in London. I just run out of the bedroom, and I jumped literally down the staircase, and I broke my shoulder blade doing this.
Oh, dear.
And I spoke to my parents about it and told them what I'd seen. They thought I was completely potty. But I broke my shoulder blade, went to the hospital, they strapped it up. Now, 2 days later, I was keen on sports, and I was in the swimming pool swimming, and there was nothing wrong with me whatsoever. When I went to the doctors, they just said that it's obviously healed, you know. But I don't think, you just don't heal that quick. So I knew in my mind that there's something going on here. Now, in later life, in the 60s, I got married, and we'd been married a little while, we got a little baby, and I was out working, and I was an electrician. And on a Friday night, I used to load my tools into the back of a little mini car, and the back came down on a piece of string. So you have to lean quite a bit over to load this car up. And my tools were heavy, and I put them into the car, and I just collapsed in pain, back pain. So I managed to struggle home, and we called the doctor in the next day. He came out of it several days, and he said, this is getting bad, you know. I was losing the feeling in my legs, and he said, this is getting bad. We need to get you in the hospital. He said, I'm not happy what's going on. So it was a summer's evening, I think it was about probably the end of the summer, around about September time. And I can remember, and this is back in the 60s, and I can remember just dozing off, then looking and seeing a person standing by my bed. And this person I describe as very clinical looking, maybe dressed in something blue, blonde, mousy hair, long shoulder length hair. I don't know if a man or a woman, beautiful blue eyes. I felt very, very safe. Now, I was not abducted. I went freely with this person. I didn't have to, and I went freely with this person. Now, I don't know whether we walked, we flew, we ran, I don't know. But we went straight through the window in the bedroom, or and the wall, straight away through out the back. And out the back of me, there were fields. So then the next thing I can remember was being inside something. But being an electrician at the time and involved in lighting, as we walked through these sort of honeycomb corridors, the light came on in front of us and went out behind us. I don't say I was panicky, but I wasn't particularly happy, because this was very, very strange to me. There was a peculiar smell in this place. I don't know, sulfury smell, I don't know. Then we went through, but I know we went into an operating theatre, and I automatically laid down on my stomach. I knew what this guy wanted me to do. And then the next thing, I've looked round, and I've seen, I can only describe it as a reptilian being doing something to me, but I've since found out through some very good friends that these reptilian beings came down from the stars, they came down from Orion, the Pharaoh people had them with them, and they're healers. But and so this can be looked up, and you can find out that this is what they were. So this is later, but then I've looked, and I thought, I shouldn't be looking at this. I've looked at the guy, and looked into his or her eyes, and I only describe it like looking through a Venetian blind with a light flickering. And then the next thing I knew, I was back in my bed, and I was sitting there, and my wife came in, and she said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Well, I've had this most peculiar, as I can describe it, a dream, but I can't remember it." I said, "I've been somewhere, and I don't know where." Then, then the next day, I've got up and gone into work as if nothing's happened. And I had that in the back of my mind until, around about the 80s, when I built a bungalow, well, with the help of other people, and I put a swimming pool in, and I was just cleaning around the tide mark at the top of the small pool to get the grease off, and I suppose you call it a trapped nerve. I trapped a nerve in my back. So I've gone to the hospital and had some x-rays done. Didn't think no more of it, and then I lived next door to my family doctor, and he came out and he said, "Terry, you're needed at the hospital." And I thought, well, there's something really bad here. So I've gone to the hospital, and I was sitting in front of a panel of about 18 to 20 people in their conference room. And then they put my x-rays up on the light box, and then they said to me, "Where did you have this operation done?" Well, I thought, what do I tell them? I can't tell them what I saw. I had no connection this time with people from another planet, shall we say. None at all. Yeah. I really couldn't think of an explanation, so I didn't give one. I said, "I don't know." And they said, "Well, it wasn't done on this planet." I thought, well, why even mention the planet? It wasn't done on this planet. And another Chinese bloke came up to me, and I said, and he said, "I'm a hematologist. I'm going to discuss now your blood tests that we got. Now, let me tell you, they took, I reckon, about 10 or 12 different samples of blood from me. My arms were aching." And he said, "You know, we found stuff in them." And I thought, "You're going to tell me I'm going to die." "No," he said, "we found stuff in them." He said, "There's chemicals that we don't know what they are." He said, "But your body makes a load of zinc, which is good, etc., etc." Then they said to me, "We want to know about your diet." So I went through a whole form with them. And I said, "No, I don't drink lemonade. I don't drink Coke. I eat pretty normal." All sorts of things were going on, which was a little bit confusing to me, because I'm in my 20s, and I thought, please tell me what's happening. So then, after that, what they told me at the hospital, I'm now worried. So now I'm thinking, I should really research this. Now, if you go back to that sort of time, in the 80s even, there wasn't a lot of talk about flying saucers, UFOs, people from other planets, you know, anything like that. Yeah. But I thought there was a connection. There's a connection out there, and I want to find out what it is. Now, they tell me this operation It couldn't even be done with keel surgery. You can't do it because you get into the sheath at the back. You can't do it. So then I'm looking at, there was a book out by Timothy Good, and I could remember a friend of mine said, you better read this. Now, I don't read books, but I read the book. And it was about military and about UFOs, but it wasn't a connection to what happened to me. Now I'm thinking, I really want to know where I fit in this puzzle, because now I'm going to go crazy worrying about this. They're telling me something. I want to know why. Why did somebody do this to me? What happened? So then I had a guy call me, a guy called Reg Presley. Love is all around the trogs, you know. And he rang me and he said, I'm a UFO investigator, and I've heard about your case, Tony. He said, you left a message on my machine. I said, yeah, I need somebody I can talk to, that I can get something sorted. Then he said to me, if you come down to this pub where I live and we meet up, he said, then bring your x-rays and bring your blood reports and we'll check it all out for you. So I did. I went down to Andover. We met in this pub. And then a guy called Colin Andrews came in. I didn't know anything about Colin. Lovely person. He came in to the pub. He was a friend of Reggie's. And Colin said, look, my father-in-law's a surgeon. We've got a private clinic in America. He'll look at all your paperwork, look at everything, your x-rays and everything, and we'll give you a genuine result of what's been going on. I said, fine. Now, I did say to Colin at the time, you have a pain in your knee, Colin, but I think I can deal with it. And he said, well, nobody knows about that. I'm going to make a surgery when I go back home. I said, well, you're not.
Yeah.
Now, I got a letter from Colin a few weeks later to say he didn't have major surgery. And I also got a report from the clinic in America to say that I'd had major surgery done to my back, but it couldn't be done. They could not do it. And also that the blood tests came back, that they were pretty freaking, there were chemicals in them. So then the reason that the book came out, that was a little bit of pressure, I suppose, because there's healing stories, there's, if you like, I suppose you call them ghosts, you know, ghost stories, there's a bit of everything. But there was a guy that wanted to meet me, and he was the ex-pargy to our Queen, Reverend Robert Beatty. And he spent about a year with me to try to decide, because he was quite a well-known healer in this country, and he wanted to know just what was happening. And he said, you know, Terry, and I think you're everything. There's a bit of everything in there, you know, and you're very, very aware of things. So I'm now getting a more of an idea of what's gone on. So then I got this hematologist from Bristol, who's a top hematologist, to look at my blood results. And he rang me and he said, what am I looking for? I said, I can't say anything. What have you found? He said, well, going by your blood results, he said, you've been out in space for at least 10 hours. Right. I can't remember being out in space for 10 hours. He said, but you have. Right. Because the blood is the same as the astronauts. It's got this thing, or it's polythene or something, which the astronauts have. So you've definitely been out in space. He said, I put my reputation on it. Now I'm thinking... And I'm thinking, and my mind's gone on overtime as I'm getting older and older, and I'm realising that I've got the connection. Mm. All it is these guys are from, or these guys and girls, if you like, are from a planet with the Orion system. Now, I've had if you like, brain talks to do with this. Not voices in my head or anything stupid like that, but it's definite brain talks about this. And I've got the connection, and I know exactly what it is. And If you read the books, the book that I've done, there's stories in there, and people say, well, you know, your wife will agree with you because that's your wife. But no, me and Diane have been married for 43 years. She knows exactly what I'm like. And she realized several years ago, she was going into hospital, and she got a very, very bad kidney complaint. And it was really bad. But I never, ever expressed that there's something I can do, because I didn't want to think that, you know, I'm some sort of a freak. So you can check all these records with the hospital. They're still there. So she's gone, and she's had tests, and she's had, I think it's a Barrymore test, where they test everything in your body, your blood that's going around, your urine and everything. And then they've done x-rays, and they realised that Diana had three kidneys, two on one side, one on the other side. Half of one worked. One didn't work, and the other one was working fine.
Yeah.
But all the tubing, or the pipe work, or the plumbing was completely messed up. And it was pumping urine, back down and causing infections. Mm. Now, she was going to go for major surgery. So I just said to her one night, let me just put my hand on where your kidneys are and see what happens. Now, since then, she's not had one infection, but they never, ever called for her to go back to hospital to have this operation.
That's
they
strange.
Never called for me to go back to the hospital.
Yeah.
So I've done a lot of digging into getting all my reports and x-rays from the hospital. And when I went to get these x-rays, they said I'd never been to the hospital. They didn't know what I was talking about, you know, never been there. But besides, they'll be thrown away by now. But I took some young lady to one side and said, can you please check it out for me? Then she called me and she said, if you come up this afternoon, I have the copies of your x-rays. I've been told to destroy them. You can have them. So I got the copies of the x-rays from this back operation.
Great.
I got the blood group test from the guy that done the blood test for me. We worked for our National Health people, the haematologist, and I was given a talk and he came up to me and he said, Terry, I was told to falsify the figures on your blood test because we didn't know what was going on.
Well,
so we made it look normal. But with the blood test, you can see the original test that they've gone over the figures to make it look as though I've just got normal blood, you know. So one thing was before we'd done the book, I actually met up with my family doctor, and he was talking, and he said to me, you know, he said, I've had cases, he said, where a surgeon, because he was an anaesthetist, he said, where a surgeon, he said, has been stuck for an operation, and all of a sudden his hands have been taken over, and he's done the operation. So he said, I don't dismiss what happened to you one little bit.
Yeah.
Now, when I tried to contact Dr. Rolls, who's the person who had me booked in for back surgery years ago, my agent actually contacted him. He said, yes, I remember, Terry, he said. He was coming in for some back surgery. He said, but it never happened. He said, but an extraordinary thing happened where the back surgery was done. So my agent said, yeah. So he said, can you do a report for me? So Dr. Rolls said, yes, if you call me back this afternoon, I'll get you a report. He called back this afternoon. He couldn't talk to Dr. Rolls. Dr. Rolls said, look, I'm retired now. I'm not interested. I asked my doctor if he can do me a report, and he said the same thing. I can't. I'm retired now. I'm not interested. Now, why is it all of a sudden they want to talk about it, and now they don't want to talk about it? So, you know, there is something there. It's a bit like the X-Files, I suppose. But
yeah,
I've managed to get every bit of paperwork to do with me. Every bit of paperwork.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so I have got the proof 100%. I've had major surgery done by people from somewhere else. I've had it done. You know.
Yes.
But you cannot.
I think that's wonderful that you can back up these claims. Do I recall somewhere that the work you had done on your back involved fusing the bones together, and that's one of the things they couldn't do?
Right, let me tell you about that, Mike. Right, I'll tell you what happened. Just recently, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I'd had a fall just on the curbside, and I had a sharp pain down my leg. So obviously I've gone to the hospital to see what it is. So they called me in for x-rays, and then it got interesting. So I had the x-rays done, then they said, oh, while you're here, Mr. Walters, we'll do your prostate for you. That'll be a bonus. I said, okay. They said, but we want to do some x-rays of your back, because we found something on the original x-rays that we're not sure of. I said, okay. Now, this was a Dr. O'Leary, who was a bone specialist. Okay?
Yeah.
I had these x-rays done. Then he said to me, Terry said, you've had more surgery. He said, what they've done, they put a bone graft in your back, because as it was before, they left there, and it had healed fine, but it was a bit weak, and you had a narrow sheath to your back, and if you'd have stepped off a curb wrong, you could have caused problems. And he said, but they put a bone graft in there for you now to support that. So I said, oh yeah. So, now, I left that hospital, this was a Friday afternoon. Now, this is very strange, right? Sunday evening, around about 11:30, this doesn't happen. I get a phone call, Dr. O'Leary here. So I said, oh yes. Sunday night, 11:30. He said, did you see me on Friday? I said, yes, I did. He said, what did we discuss? I said, we discussed this operation I'd had, and also I was telling you about a book that I'd written. And I also explained to you about my operation. He said, yes. He said, now this is strange, he said, because I can't remember any of this. He said, and also, he said, the audio tape, which I got to be translated through my secretary to your doctor, has gone missing. And they don't go missing. So he said, look, can you bring your book over now to the hospital? I said, it's half past 11 on Sunday night. No. I said, I'll post it to you.
Yeah.
So I posted in the book. Then I thought, well, now I need these x-rays, these new x-rays, I need them. So about a week later, I run the hospital and I said, I called in, had these back x-rays done, give them my hospital number, can you please check for the x-rays for me so I can pick a copy up? No, you didn't have to come to this hospital. I said, look, I've just given you a number and I have a letter here, an appointment date for Friday. I can assure you I came in. No, no, we never sent you that letter. I left it about an hour and I went back and I got a hold of somebody else. So I explained and the girl said, right, she said, your x-rays aren't here at the moment, Mr. Waters. They've been sent off to Oxford because we need some comments about them. We need people to look at them. So she said, but I don't know why. So I said, okay. She said, if you want to ring, she said, the following Tuesday at 2 o'clock, call me and I'll tell you what's happening. So I called her and she said, do you know, she said, these x-rays have gone missing. Let me look and I'll call you back. She called me back. She said, I found them hidden up on the top shelf. She said, but there is a report there, she said, but I can't make head or tail of it because I don't understand what the writing is. She said, look, if you call over in an hour, ask for me, you have to pay for these things, it's £25. She said, I'll have a set ready for you. So now I have the x-rays of that back operation as well. So I've got the original ones and I've got the up-to-date one.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Now, I've gone down to the doctor's because I like swimming. And I've been swimming with my grandson. But I got my ears were waterlogged. So I've gone down there, so she's had a look, the nurse has had a look, and she said, you know, she said, it might be an idea, she said, if we syringe your ears out. Have you ever had them syringed out? I said, no. So she done one of them, and she said, come back in 2 days' time, and we'll do the other one. So I went back, and then she said to me, oh, she said, you got a growth in your ear. So I said, oh. She said, you better go and see the doctor. Now, my doctor has done a report in that book for me, so my doctor knows what I'm like. So I went to see the doctor and she said to me, I have a specialist on ears, nose and throat here today because it's a bit of a clinic at the surgery. So she called him in and he had a look and he said, oh yes, he said, you've had an operation done for glue ear, which we do for the children now. And the doctor said, no, you haven't. I said, no, I haven't. No, he said, you have. I said, no, I haven't. So now there's another operation that I didn't even know about because my ear was in such a state that it's been fixed. So then as the specialist walked out, she said, well, you know, you're the loser. You should really listen. You know, no, I'm not interested, he said, and he took off. I recently got new doctors down there and they're sort of on my wavelength and they've read my book. They're very interested. They've done a fresh blood test for me, like an MOT. Yeah, the chemicals are still there. Everything's still as it is. So it's still an ongoing thing.
Right. Now, just getting back to what you said, the way the doctors sort of closed ranks on you, do you think was because they were frightened of something they couldn't explain?
Well, that probably is it. You see, I had a good agent at the time, a guy called Mike Katermi. And he was good, and he'd been around this subject, I mean, way before. I mean, I wouldn't even believe in a UFO. But my granddaughter said to me, Granddad, why are you talking about UFOs? She said, you've been on boredom. She said, they're not a UFO to you.
Right.
She said, don't be silly. So, but I wouldn't even dream of thinking about UFOs, you know. But my agent, he'd done UFO reality, he was in on that, he's been with loads and loads of people, to do with this, himself to find out what's going on. So he had a mission to find out all this paranormal stuff, what's happening. So when he got hold of me, I suppose he thought he hit the jackpot. So he used to do loads and loads of research for me. And he used to ask these people, in his professional role, about me and what happened. And then all of a sudden, he spoke to me one day and he said, I'm moving down to Glastonbury. I said, lovely. And then he wouldn't ring me and he wouldn't talk to me. Now, me and Mike, I mean, I love him to death. And for about the last 4 years, maybe, I've not heard from him, and I email him, and I'll call him, but he never replies to me. Right. So I don't know whether they got to him as well. I don't know.
Sounds like it.
Oh. I do know.
Sounds like it.
Well, I was on the for the local council, the one in the next town to me. I was on that council, you don't counsel people. What you do, you look after the local community as a councillor. You know what I mean, Mike, you're a local councillor. Not an MP, but a local councillor. So people come to you with the problems in the community to make sure that you're spending their rate money properly, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Now, when I was on there, and there was quite a few people that I sort of switched on to, like the councillors, the leader of the councillor. And the leader of the council had come up to me one day and he said, you know, Terry, he said, I've heard stories about you. He said, but could you just come around my house? I've not been around his house before, met his wife, Jan, lovely people. He said, because my wife, Jan, he said, he's very, very ill. He said, and she gets these terrible headaches. So I said, okay. So I said, right. I said, well, I'll come round there. So I went round there and nothing really happened. Nothing really happened at all until later on in the evening. Then I just said to Jan, oh, I said, I think I know why you get headaches, Jan. I said, if you got this thing like a powder puff, like a container, with like when you open it, it's like a bluey light in there which reflects, and there's a chain in there or something. So she's gone upstairs and me dying and her husband sitting downstairs, and she's gone upstairs, and we're going, you're getting warmer, you're getting close. I said, no, you got it. And she brought it down. So I said, right. I said, well, I need to talk to you about it, Jan. So I took her upstairs, and I explained why she got the headaches and what was happening. And it went back years ago, this with one of her old boyfriends who'd upset her big time. But that was the problem. He'd upset her big time. He'd done some nasty stuff to her, and it upset her. But what I managed to do was get rid of that trigger that when she talks of him, you know, it was a trigger, and she got a headache. Now she don't even think about him no more. So, I mean, there's loads and loads of healing stories. There's loads and loads of ghost stories. I mean, the book we'd done, we could have made about 30 books of, but it was all sort of pressed down, you know, into short stories, pasted down, you know. I had a big publisher offer me a lot of money to do that book. Now, the book is not about making money. The money it cost to get that book out, they're all colour pictures. The money it cost to get that book out by this publisher was a lot of money. So we've done it at a reasonable price of £8 a copy. So it's throwaway money. So if you don't like it, you can bin it. You can go and buy a McDonald's probably for more money than the book's worth. So we've done it at a reasonable price, and we've done it because I didn't want to go around meeting people with a in mind of healing people, because I can't claim that I can heal everybody, but now and again it happens. So the book has got magic in it. There was an Egyptian guy, Dr. Hani Hosseini. He wrote a book called Search Around Seti. He co-authored Search Around Seti. I was fortunate to meet this guy, and he said, Terry, in the book you've captured Egyptian magic. Good magic for healing. And, you know, even Colin Andrews says he takes that book to bed with him. Loads of people said, I take that book everywhere I go. Loads of people said to me, witness that I take that in my handbag, I do, and take it everywhere I go. You know, now, that's something, because I think they got something from the book. I've had letters from people all around the world claiming fantastic things. I've had letters from surgeons telling me that they've had operations done that they haven't done, were about to do. I mean, should I tell you some of that? I mean, are you interested in that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, can't mention names, but right. When I gave a talk in America at the Nevada Convention about 1998, I think it was, they asked me over there to give a talk, which I did. And of course there's loads and loads of people there. After I give the talk, there's loads and loads of people there, people from all over the world, and they said to the organizer, can Terry do some healing? And I thought, well, I don't do healing, but you know, I'm quite prepared to give some time up. So on a Thursday lunchtime, they got a room for me to go in. And I turned up there and I had a big shock because there was like a big queue of hundreds of people. And I thought, oh dear, you know. My wife said, well, I'm off. I'll leave you to it. Now, we had some really, really good, well, I had some really, really good results from that. And But I had a woman who actually rung me up. A friend of ours rung us up afterwards and said this lady would like to talk to me. And I said, sure, give her my phone number. But while we was at the talk, there was a military guy there, and he was interested in me. And he said, because in Vietnam, he said, one of his soldiers was completely blown to pieces. Now, he turned up in a military hospital a month or 2 months later. Okay. They asked him what happened to him, because his friends see him dead. They asked him what happened to him. And he gave us the story that these people came to him that I saw and operated on him, and he's fine. He just had a few minor scratches on him. So it does happen to other people. But getting back to this this lady in America, she actually emailed me, and she said that her husband was very, 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 very ill, and he was having, I think, three major heart surgery bypasses, and she was worried about him. But she never mentioned me at all, and she never mentioned, and she said that I signed a copy of the book for her in America, but she never mentioned the book. She said he would not believe that in a million years. She said, but her son is currently reading the book, and he finds it interesting. So she said, can you help him? And I said, I really, really don't know, but I'd love to, because I won't refuse anybody, but I'm not going to go to America and start messing around, you know. So I said, let me see what I can do. So I said, if you've got the book, ask them at the hospital if you can place it near his bed without him seeing it. So she said, well, the operation's actually tomorrow, Terry. So I said, that's fine, if they let you do that. So she put it in a cabinet by his bed. And then the next day, she rung me up after the operation, and she said, do you know, she said that they took him down there for the operation. He's come back, and the surgeon said, we've cut him open, but we didn't need to operate. He was done. So then she said, I've got this book. He said, before you tell me, he said, can I tell you that when I was laying on that bed before I went in, I looked and I saw a tall blonde person who said, I'll take care of you. She said, oh. So then she said, well, look at this person in the book. He said, that was similar to what I saw, who took care of me. Now, the surgeon from that hospital rang me up and asked me what was going on. I said, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. He said, well, I think it's marvellous. You know, he said, this operation was done. Now, I said to his wife that her husband would be very, very ill, because the shock to his system, and he would be ill. I said, don't worry, he's not going to go. He'd just be ill and he'd get over it, which he did do. So then they offer you all sorts of things that I don't want. I must explain that I've never charged a penny for healing. I go to work, I do a proper job, and this is something I'm gifted with. And if people offer me money, I say, no, thank you. If I can't give you to nothing, then I'm not interested. The book we didn't make a penny out of. All we've done is virtually got most of the money back for the printing of the book. It wasn't a money-making effort. And a lot of people said, oh, well, you've got a book, you're making a fortune. Never. Never made a penny from it. I've worked out, I've been an electrician, a car salesman. I've had my own business selling cars, bringing American cars over here, selling them, doing property deals. I've done well, thank you very much. But I don't charge for healing, not a penny, not interested. You know, and I do take this very, very seriously what happened to me, and I have to, and I don't want to lose it.
Right. Now, can I ask you something here? You know Robert Bothell, and you went to Egypt with him and Graham Hancock.
Yeah.
And through that, if you didn't know before, you must have linked the gods that came to the Egyptians from Orion with your belief that you lived in an ancient period in Egypt.
That's right.
So do you think that this is the reason you've got the contact now, is because you had it in the past?
Well, Robert Bovell has written in the book that he thought that I was a pharaoh, but a very important pharaoh. I'll tell you what happened with Robert. He actually came to me because I can't forget the lady's name, some lady in England here, she was very interested in UFOs, but I don't think that she got it quite right, but she'd done some research on things, which was all right, but she'd heard, oh, I tell you what, I did a TV thing, which was a mistake. All this TV stuff, they just want to wind you up. I did a program called The Time and the Place, okay? Right. Now, I'll talk you quickly through that, because we've got a bit of time. So, this was the first TV that I'd done, and I explained what happened to me, and of course, they're all laughing and thinking, you know, some sort of an idiot. Well, that's fine, if that's what they think. But then, When I was going on the show, we stayed at a hotel up in Norwich, and in the morning I came down, and the other people that were going to appear on the show were there, and some guy came up to me and he said to me, "Are you the idiot that believes in UFOs?" I said, "I'm not an idiot, and I don't believe in UFOs." He said, "Well, I'm a bingo caller." I said, "Well, that says a lot to me."
Yeah.
So I said, why have you got a black button on your jacket sewn up with white cotton? Must be stupid. "Oh, dear," he said. Then I looked at his girlfriend. I think it was his girlfriend or fiancée or wife, I don't know. Now, her face, Mike, was covered in like a pizza. It looked terrible. And I said, "Oh, my God, what's wrong with you?" And she said, "I've got a rare disease, like a shingles on my face and eczema, and I'm frightened to go in the studio because the hot lights will make it worse. I've got a load of makeup on and I feel terrible." Now, that really hit me, right? So now we're in the studio and we've done the program. And after the program, she came over to me and she said, "Look at my face." And I looked and I couldn't believe it. It's like a baby's bum. Everything's gone. She said, "Wonderful. Your friends come to me. Look what they've done to my face." And her boyfriend looked. Now, the presenter of the show, his name's just skip me for a minute, John Stapleton, he come over and he said, "My God, Terry, what's happened?" And then everybody comes up and they want to know. So, and then he said, "Look, let's go to the green room." So we went to the green room. Now, that is video, so that happened. Okay?
Yeah.
You can see it, and you can see it, and that happened. So that was the benefit I got. It doesn't matter if everybody takes the mickey out of you or thinks you're wind up or thinks you're completely daft. Doesn't matter. Because Robert Beattie said to me, "Let no man put you down." And I don't get upset because I don't care. And I said to people, "You can't stop what happens to these people happening, whatever you say to me, because I don't get upset about it. And I'm not interested. You know, and one day you might need me." Who knows? So then after that show, I get a phone call down from Robert Bovell. And I was on the show, and this lady was on the show, so she saw what happened. And she knew Robert. So Robert's contacted me, he said, "I'd like to meet you." He wasn't too far away from me, about 40 minutes driving a car. And he said, "I'll bring Graham with me, Graham Hancock, who wrote The Fingerprints of the Gods." And he said, "I've got this new book out, so The Orion Mystery, which I'm just finishing. But I want to meet you." He said, "Because of a story that you said about the pharaohs. So come to my home." And he said, "What happens?" So I get this reoccurring thing to me. I'll be relaxing, and I know I'm in front of the pyramids, down by the Sphinx. I know I'm there. And a big red hot sun comes over, I can describe it as. But it comes over and it takes me. But it's taking me somewhere. And I snap out of it quick. Now, Robert said, if you was a very, very important pharaoh or one of the kings, we're talking about kings here from other planets with a pure thoroughbred bloodline, not our royal family, but a really, really thoroughbred, you know, bloodline, not mixed at all. He said, what would happen? He said, they would experience that, but as a person, they would go into somewhere else, like a spirit place, which is this place in Orion. Now, I've not been there through that because I've stopped what happens to me. So he said, I think that going back to the ancient pharaohs, this is what they used to do, and this is what's happening, reoccurring to you, because probably you were there at the time. Now, I also know that there's a place anywhere on this planet, providing everything's lined up with the solar system, the stars, etc., that you can be, and you can travel through this place to somewhere else. A lot of people say it's like a stargate. Well, whatever you want to call it, don't matter. I found this place when I was in Egypt. My mechanics of my body and the electricity of this place all added up that it could happen. But I was a bit worried because I didn't want to go. So I was with a friend of mine, David, and I got hold of David and threw him in front of me. I thought, well, he's going to come with me. We didn't go anywhere, but it's a very magical place, you know. So when people talk about stargates and things, that's how they describe it. Well, yeah, I can go along with that. There is something going on there. But I think, in my mind, I've got to be very, very careful as to what happens to me. Otherwise, I could finish up, and I've got a wife and family here, so I don't want no bad things to happen. I think, basically, that we have got another us.
Yeah.
That, on that planet, the other side of the line. When people say they have a near-death experience, they see themselves, and they make their mind up what they want to do, because they're very, very powerful. They make their mind up, yes, I will stay here. No, if I stay here, I'm going to suffer. I've got to go.
Yes.
Or yes, I will stay here. So these people that I see, I think are just us. They brought us here in the beginning. Mm. They'll always be here, but they are another us, somewhere else, very, very powerful. If you like the some of the American Indians say, we've got two spirits and a soul, maybe you've got one of these spirits somewhere else, who knows?
Yes, certainly a link.
Yeah.
Is it true that you at one time dreamt that some of the beings from Orion were captured by the UK government?
That's right. They was, they was up in, I think it was in Bedfordshire. What it was, I could hear them, and I could see them in my mind, and they were very panicky. They needed to get out of this place. Now, what happened was, my son-in-law was a van driver at the time, delivery van driver, and he said, you know, he said, I had to go to Bedfordshire, past this place, to the RAF place. He said, I think it was the home of the Harrier jet at the time, something like that. And he said, do you know, he said, I pass there regular. He said, they're all on patrol out there, all the RAF people. You can't get near the place. There's something going on. So I knew in my mind that was happening. And I could hear these people very, very desperate to get out of there. I don't know what the outcome of that was. I just don't know. I felt like getting in the car and driving up there, but they'd actually put extra barbed wire, razor barbed wire in the place as well.
Yes.
So I knew that, you know, if you like, my family were in there, trapped.
Yes. Talking of the government, because of your experiences and this link with ETs, do you ever get harassed or threatened or anything like that?
Well, I tell you, I know... I know an MP, okay?
Yeah.
And he has said to me, anything I tell him, he believes. He knows what I'm like. And I told him of something that was happening back in the days when the Irish were, you know, setting bombs off and things and being generally nasty. And I told him when there was a bomb, I told him just where it was planted in the House of, well, up on the House of Commons, it was one of the buildings off of it. And but he couldn't find this place. He sent security, and then I said that the telephone workers, they weren't, had been in there, and there was an important meeting going on with some important people from around the world, and they were going to be blown to pieces. Do you know they found it? He said,
yeah.
On the second look, we found it. So
right.
I think I got a bit of respect there, with and also coming out in the open with my staff, I sort of done myself an insurance.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there was There was a time when I was dealing in American cars, the guy rang me up from the American Embassy and said, would I be interested in these cars? I said, no, because they're too expensive. Oh, please come out and have a look. So I drove up, and there was a particular car there. It was a Chrysler convertible. I knew my wife wanted one of those, so I bid on it. Anyway, next day, this guy, he's rung me up, and his name's Ray Basden. And he said, you bought the car, Terry. So I said, right. So he said, come up. So I said to my son-in-law, would you come with me to drive the car back? And I took my grandson with me. And Barry must have been about 12 years old then. So we driven up to London. We go in the American Embassy. They made a fuss of Barry, you know. They showed him all the military people were hiding, and they gave him a pass to get in. And then Ray said, come on, we go to the restaurant. He said, we've got £1 million restaurant here. We've got any food you want. So we got in the restaurant, and we're just sitting down there having a meal. And then Barry said to this guy, Ray, you must stop having that affair with your secretary, because your wife's going to find out. And he looked at me, and I said, Barry, he said, no, he said, you must stop now. He said, now your little boy that's in hospital having an operation, he said, he's going to be fine, he's just having his tonsils out, you've got nothing to worry about. He said, how does he know? I said, because he's very special and he knows things, but I don't want him to say too much because it's embarrassing. So then he said to him, my granddad knows a lot about what you call UFOs, if you want to know. And then Ray said to me, do you know what I do? I said, no. He said, well, if there's a UFO or something going on for our country, they call me up and I go and investigate it.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, what do you know about Travis Walton? He said, well, I was called out when he was taken. You know, when he came back, he said, I was called out. He said, but we're driving to this, it might have been just one of the hotels, it might have been a Holiday Inn or something. He said, but it was a long way away from where we were, but we felt that someone was following us. He said, and we were getting very, very tired. He said, when we met him, he said, this bloke was grasping his hands very, very tightly. I said, he had something in his hands, actually. He said, well, I mustn't disclose this. I said, no, nor must I. And he said, you're right. He said, but I interviewed him, he said, you know, at the time. And actually, I've been fortunate to talk to Travis on a few occasions, you know, and send him my book.
Yes.
So, apparently he disappeared for about a week, you know, and then he came back. But you see, the film Fire in the Sky is different to what he says it is. Obviously, it's a film.
Yeah, but, I did see the film. Yes.
But you seen the film?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So what he said was, I didn't see. He said what I saw were tall blonde people with blue eyes, and he actually has got some new pictures that he sent me. How he described these people were similar to what I've seen myself. You know.
Right. Yeah.
So he said, but they didn't do those nasty things to him. I think what he did, he got in the way of this craft. I think he was dead because of the radiation. And I think what they'd done was actually took him away and revived him, you know?
Yeah.
So I think he was quite pleased with that. And, you know, when people talk about crystals and stones and things like that, I mean, you see, a friend of mine, who's a really good friend, who's a real UFO researcher and a sort of experienced guy called Ken Sennington, who got to run the Congress in America, you know. He said to me once, you've got on your horse tail, he said, you better ride it. And I didn't know what he meant, but I do now, because I've met so many people through this, genuine people, train spotters, you know, that don't know the hell they're talking about. But when it comes to crystals, there are certain crystals that will do things, but 99% of them won't do anything for you. But I'll tell you something, it's not a secret. If you go back to the ancient times, and you go back to why the pyramids were there, they were there, they was like for transferring spirits and souls to this planet. It was a big up and running machine. Yeah. And now, I actually explained this to Graham Hancock, and he put it in his new book, and he said it on the TV. Everything I said, they would, you know, they knew, and they would use my material, which is all right. It doesn't make no difference. But if you go to any of these old stones, like if you go to, I don't know, Stonehenge or Avebury or something like that, if you go to these stones, and you stand by the north side of the stone, the best time is about 1:30, 2 o'clock. Around about 12-ish, you get the ether wind from the planets, radiation. Now, because they have granite stones, they're loaded with good radiation, and it filters through and it comes out the north side. So if you're not feeling so good, a bit of rheumatism, arthritis, just stand there for about an hour, and you'll benefit.
Right.
And they were healing stones, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
That's free.
That's very good advice. What I was going to ask you now is, when you talk of your, sort of we've called it, which is true, your healing abilities, are they spontaneous, or can you actually do it when you wish? Or is it both?
You got it. I'll tell you, I was at our local shopping centre about 3 years ago, and a lady there, that I knew well, she had a very, very bad neck, and she had a collar on, and she had a very bad neck. I just got the urge, and I said, look, just take that collar off. And she looked at me a bit odd, but she thinks I'm odd anyway, so it didn't matter. So she took the collar off.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, a spark came out of my finger that you would not believe, and it made me jump.
Oh.
And she said, my God, she said, I can move my neck. That's brilliant, Terry. Can you do that for my husband? He's got a bad back. I said, no. It's just something that's spontaneous to you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, when people that I've had, when people are not very well, I usually say, just send me a photograph when you were well, and let me look at it, and see what happens. And I do get some results from that. I don't really claim to be a healer. I haven't got a clinic set up and say, you know, come and see Terry and get you better.
Mm.
Don't work like that. You know, he'll rip you off and charge you 50 quid. Because I wouldn't.
No,
I wouldn't do that. But if they send a picture, if I request it, I have to request it because then I've got a connection.
Then I can
read that picture by running my hands over it, and I've got a good idea then, if I can give you a year, I will. If I can cure completely, I will. Not me, But through me, I'll do it. Not problem.
I think you're going to be inundated with photographs all of a sudden.
I usually get young ladies in bikinis. Well, I think they're private.
Yes, oh well. There's some perks in the job then.
Well, all you really need to do, if you go to, you know, like the website, ufotalks.com.
Yeah.
Now, you can get the book from there, and it's not dear, and I'll post it out to you the same day as you give me the order. And you can pay on your credit card through PayPal. You don't have to have an account with them. You know, and then just see what happens. That's what a lot of people are doing. You know, I'm just, you know, like when I give lectures in that, they come up and buy a book. Then a few weeks later, incredible things happen. So that's fine. The book was out there, actually. It was for magic. It was not for me going around like the healer that I knew, like Robert Beattie, he'd go around all the hospitals with me.
Hmm.
But I thought, I can't do this. So if we get magic in the book, then it works.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we don't want to know we've done. Even Yuri Geller, who lives down the road, he's got the book. And he said to me, you know the picture on that book, he said, you capture magic in it, Terry. He said, there's not the picture on the front cover of the book.
Now, Terry, we've got a limited amount of time left here because I have to close the show at 5 minutes to the hour. You get premonitions of things. Have you got any messages or any ideas about the immediate future?
In the book, there's a premonition of the tsunami.
Yeah.
Okay? The recent one, that's in there.
Right.
For the future?
Yes.
No, because I won't give them out. I give one out on a TV program once, and I think I'm going to get into trouble through the MPs and that, because I told them the truth. Nothing. I know that there's going to be quite a few earthquakes, because from that tsunami, it's not over yet. It's not over. The earthquakes are not over. And the earth at the moment, we recently had one in England, and we had one in Scotland a while back, which I predicted. We're going to have quite a few disturbances, but most of these are made through man drilling for oil and digging for diamonds.
Yeah.
And there's a book in there about the diamond trade and what happened in Russia. And they've dug so deep and blown the permafrost to pieces, they've gone about 5 miles down into the Earth's crust.
Right.
And that is on that in Siberia. That's on that weak fault line.
Yes.
So most of these new things, are through man.
Yes, yes. They obviously either aren't aware or they don't care. And I suppose with the greed
it's
or
all greed,
profit,
you know. People send me messages, love and light, which I don't understand. I understand love, but I don't know where the light comes from. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But yes, love will make the world go round, but money's seizing up at the moment because it's greed. I can't give my book away because we're afraid to get it done. I'd willingly give it away, but I can't afford to. You know?
No.
But at the end of the day, it's money which is making the world go round because it's cocking it up.
That's
what's doing it. But we can't
carry
on, love, can we?
You've told us about your book. Is your DVD a commentary by yourself about your experiences? How does it relate to the book?
The DVD?
Yes.
Yeah. It's an interview with Ken Sellington.
All right, yeah.
And it's done about 97. It's a proper thing done in a studio.
Right.
And I'm explaining about Egypt and the pharaohs.
Right.
I'm explaining about my back operation. I'm explaining about loads of this. It's about an hour long.
Yeah.
And I sold quite a few of those. And there again, it cost money to produce them. It was done as a video, then we done it as a DVD.
Right, okay.
But I couldn't.
How did you get that one in? Because you've mentioned your book. I've literally got about a minute and a half left, Terry.
Yeah.
So. The time's gone so quickly, and you're terrifically interesting, and you tell a good story, and I believe you entirely. So I'm going to have to say thank you very much for appearing on the programme, and wish you all the best, while I quickly announce the guest I've got coming up next week, who, as it happens, is also a man who's very much involved in ETs, Sheldon Neidl. So I don't know if you're aware of him. Sheldon Neidl was on my programme not too many weeks ago, but he's the type of person who can come on quite often and provide us with plenty to talk about. So Sheldon Neidl is an earthly representative for the Galactic Federation and very much involved in the changes that are coming up. So I'll thank everybody for being with me. I know you must have enjoyed it, so I hope you'll be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you, Terry.
Thanks.